This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best-tasting protein powder out there. You can check them out at BlackStarLabs.com. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. This week's episode features music by Wolf Parade titled What Did My Lover Say? You can check them out at SubPop.com. Hey guys, what up? It is Kevin Larrabee here. I'm talking to you a little bit before we get into the main show because, well, it was just the Perform Better Summit here in Rhode Island. And I just want to quickly say it was a huge pleasure to get to meet a lot of the listeners out there and the fans and stuff like that. It's always a pleasure. And again, you guys are always incredibly nice and It's a reason why we do this show. I say that a lot, but it's really true. Also, had some great seminars and presentations that we got to see over the weekend, including Thomas Myers, who you might know from Anatomy Trains. Sue Falzone talked about the thoracic spine. Who else did I see? I got to go to Dos Remedios's cardio strength training hands-on, which was more, it was less like a hands-on and more like a, I'm really sore the next day. But it was really good. It was still really good. And I think you guys are going to like the stuff that I have, coming up around it. I wasn't able to shoot too much video or audio, but I'm going to have some content for the website. I promise I do have some videos and I will have a write-up on the seminar. And hopefully, we have some more stuff for you. I'm going to the Perform Better in Chicago. I just booked my tickets like hours ago. So I promise I'm going to have more video and audio stuff from that. I'm just going to pick up some better equipment to make it a little bit more feasible to get that stuff done so I don't have to carry a laptop around with me. But that's it. I just want to quickly get that stuff out of the way. Again, thank you for everyone that came up and said hi to me at the seminar. It's a huge pleasure, as always. And you guys are nothing but fantastic. And it's great to see you guys going out to the Perform Better seminars. They're a fantastic resource, whether you're a professional in this field or just a weekend warrior. So I'm going to stop talking. Here is the rest of the podcast with John, myself, and Martin Rooney. Check it out. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 182. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me, at least for now, is Dr. Jonathan Fass of acceleratedstrength.com and jonathanfass.blogspot.com. John, have you been blogging?
No.
Okay, we have a great show lined up for you this week. Coming up in a little bit, we have an awesome interview with Martin Rooney from the Parisi Speed School. Martin's interview is absolutely fantastic, and we're going to talk a little bit about it in the interview, but I really recommend that you check out his book, Ultimate Warrior Workouts, on Amazon. It's literally $20. I'll post a link for it in the show notes, and it seems really cool. And I think, John, you'd really dig it as well. Mm-hmm. It's all about... Yeah, do you want to let me continue?
No.
Okay, well, basically, he went around the world, and he kind of picked the brains of all the guys that teach like martial arts and do mixed martial arts training and stuff like that, and put it all into one book.
That's very cool.
And we had some great discussions about it in the interview. So I think you guys are really going to dig it, whether it be you like mixed martial arts or you want to get some new ideas for fat loss training. Like I think it's really interesting to see what he has to say and what other people are doing around the world, because it makes a great point that we have such great equipment here in terms of for strength and conditioning, in terms of weights, machines. Like Perform Better is stationed in the United States, so obviously we're at a little bit of an advantage. They're great equipment suppliers. Same thing with EliteFTS.com. And basically what he says, you know, a lot of people overseas are doing much more bodyweight stuff, and they're doing... just more intense endurance type stuff, and they're getting just as good results. I mean, you have guys that do MMA training overseas, and they don't have as great of equipment as we have over here, but they're able to compete with the best of the best over here as well. So I think that's, I mean, I think you'll find it more interesting just because you are such an MMA fan.
Yeah. I mean, we used to put on a, like an MMA conditioning class at Rutgers as one of the non-credit, you know, exercise classes. And we actually, the lightweight champ, the current UFC lightweight champ is actually a coach at Rutgers. So we actually have a very strong mixed martial arts group at Rutgers. It was an awesome class, and you just die. It is such extreme conditioning. It's really good.
Very cool. Well, you guys can check that out in a little bit. Also going to have an interview with PJ Street. I don't know if we're going to run that this week. We might, though, depending on if I talk to Lee. So probably. And also, I want to give people a heads up. I did not know this until 3 days ago or so, but we just passed our 4-year anniversary for the FitCast.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I saw that.
So that's
congratulations.
That's pretty nuts. And it almost feels like it's been a college degree like run we had. So it's really, really interesting. And again, and you know, I don't think I do this enough, but I want to thank everyone out there that listens and downloads the show every single week, whether it be a guest that you want to listen to or not. I think it's really cool to have your guys' support. And like I said, we wouldn't do the show unless you guys downloaded it. So huge thank you to all you out there.
4-year degree. You can put it on your resume.
Yeah, I got a degree in podcasting.
Yeah. I hate Professor Fass. He's such a dick. His homework sucks.
Okay. The Perform Better Summit is coming up this weekend. I'm talking in the future, or in the past right now, but for me it's the future. For you it's in the past. And I'm bringing my laptop, my expensive microphone, and my expensive video recording device to see if we can get some interviews and some video content for you guys. I hope to get a lot. We have a great lineup. I got the little sheet with me right here. The lineup includes the likes of Martin Rooney, guest that we have on this week, of course, Alan Cosgrove, Brian Grasso, Steve Cotter, Mike Boyle, Al Vermeil. I was talking with John a little bit earlier that I'm really pumped to see Sue Falzone, who's talking, giving a presentation on the thoracic spine, the missing link, when discussing the quote core. Todd Durkin, who we talked about in the past, Chris Frankel, who does the TRX stuff, he's been on the show in the past, and Thomas Myers, Anatomy Trains and Training. I will be there 8 a.m. Sunday morning.
Cool.
And I might have him sign my book. And he also has a, I'm probably going to go on Sunday morning. He's doing his talk, and then right after that, he's doing his hands-on, so I'll probably go to both of those. It sounds like it'd be really cool. And last is probably go to Lee Taft, but you don't need to know what I'm seeing this weekend, because I will probably have a write-up or at least a pack of interviews for you guys for the next couple weeks, and we'll probably spread them out, but I'm really excited. Hopefully we can get some great, great stuff for you guys and have a lot of fun as well. Looking forward to meeting up with some fans of the show, as well as meeting Dose for the first time. We were supposed to meet a couple years ago, but we got a snowstorm between us, but now we'll meet. And the glue guy, Brett Contreras, who I feel like would be, like, I would get along quite well with him.
I mean, he seems like a pretty chillax guy.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. And
yeah,
I think that's it. Hopefully, you know, hopefully I won't, go too crazy with the caffeine and be stuttering throughout the interviews, but hopefully it won't be a big deal. And for people that are interested about what I'm going to pack, I got a brand new blog on kevinlarby.com. I blogged twice this week. Can you believe it? And one had references to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Wow. That in and of itself is excellent.
Yes, it is. So we got the seminar, and also, guys, t-shirts. I'm going to set up a better way to pick up t-shirts on the fitcast.com. Basically, what you can do is you can go to the fitcast.com, click on the t-shirts button, or the t-shirts link on the top of the page, and you can just directly use PayPal. And what is going to be there at the bottom is going to be a basically a donation button. So if you donate the $22 or the $30, depending on whether you're in the U.S. or the States, it just makes it a lot easier than having to, you know, put my email into PayPal and all that stuff. So unfortunately, we don't have an easier way to do it right now. It's very cool. I think a lot of people are liking the shirts. So thank you, everyone out there that ordered. Just got another order this morning from... I can't give out the name because it's a surprise for his girlfriend.
Oh, nice.
Just sweet. John, you got anything else? Should we ask you what you've been doing? Probably not.
I don't know. I figured that's what the off topic was for, where you didn't do it there.
Okay. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with the mailbag, so stick around. Okay, time for the mailbag. The first question that we have comes from Jody, and it's for John. Hello, Kevin Lee and Dr. Fast. The question is directed towards Dr. Fast, but I would welcome anyone's input. I have developed an annoying dull pain in my right shoulder that feels similar to a bruise. My shoulder is more aggravated on some days and better on others, so the severity of the pain is very inconsistent. Some days I hardly hurt at all, and some days the pain will increase throughout the day. The soreness is located mostly around the anterior part of the delts, but the soreness is not superficial. It actually feels very deep within the shoulder joint. I can actually locate the aggravated sore spot with my thumb within a slender strip of the anterior delts. The problem is my range of motion is affected by the irritation. Placing my right hand across my chest and onto the left shoulder intensifies the pain to a sharp, piercing type that is pretty intense. John, I think we know where we're going with this. If I leave my right hand on my left shoulder and begin to raise my elbow, and pain gets even worse, reaching behind my back also aggravates it to a lesser degree. I have a very wide shoulder base for my height. I continue to do my daily P90X workouts as best I can. I take some naproxen. Sodium.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really seems to help. The arm circles and other shoulder warm-ups are part of the P90X seem to help my shoulder and feel better during the workout. But sometimes pull-ups and push-ups seem to make it pretty sore the next day. What do you think the cause of this could be? Do you think I might have some kind of impingement? Ding, ding. It is also possible that there could be some muscle pinching between the coracoid process causing internal bruising. Why would it be worse some days than others? Could I be sleeping on it wrong? The Ficast may very well be the best thing on iTunes. Don't change a thing. Jody, PS, I experienced almost exactly the same thing with my left shoulder in the past, but eventually it got better. I've had no problems with it. Now the right shoulder has been like this for a while now. I'm starting to wonder what's going on here. I want to graduate to more compound movements and heavier lifts in the future, so I need to get a handle on this. John, let's talk about shoulder impingements.
Let's do it. What I really liked about this question was that she actually described, from what I could see, at least three special tests without knowing it. So if she came in to the clinic and said, I have this pain, I would have done the three things that she mentioned causes her pain. And as a little side note, that's all that a special test is. A special test is a provocation test. So if we think some kind of structure is involved, we find out ways to basically injure that structure. And if that's what hurts, you go, oh, that must be what it is. With shoulder tests, we usually need clusters because any one single test isn't enough to say definitively, this is what you've got. But the group here is pretty interesting. So she's got a crossbody impingement sign, so that reaching across. When you lift the elbow, when you're holding your left shoulder and you lift that elbow up, that's like a general impingement screening. It's a real quick and dirty way. You can also add resistance to that, and if that increases pain, that's also indicative of a positive. Reaching behind the back is called a liftoff. Like an Apley scratch test, liftoff test, things like that. And that has to do with the subscap. So possibly we've got an impingement and we've got subscapular involvement. Possibly. Only three tests, so you can't say that definitively. And things like, you know, crossbody could also be an AC joint separation test. So that's why we need groups of things, but that's what it sounds like to me. So my first instinct here would be impingement. Suggestion as far as why it hurts more some days than others, I can't really tell you, but in general, I think sleeping could probably have something to do with it, especially depending on how you sleep. Sleeping on your back is always the best, your safest bet, and it's usually the position that the fewest number of people can actually perform. So what I recommend for trying to sleep on your back, surround yourself with pillows, cover yourself with the blanket, kind of wrap it up tight. It makes it a little bit easier to sleep on your back, but it's still pretty difficult, and I'd be lying if I said that I could do it consistently also. But what that will do is it'll take pressure off. It'll put you in good alignment and hopefully help an impingement. Go see somebody, you know, things like a subscap release and a pec minor release in situations like this usually give you very quick results. And then from that point, you need to strengthen the stuff that is most likely weak, which would be scapular stabilizers, mid traps, low traps. That's a usual, the basic kind of treatment plan. And then, you know, depending what else may be there, you may have internal rotation deficit. You may have a whole bunch of things going on that also need to be addressed. But in general, soft tissue work to the subscap and pec minor, possibly range of motion, internal range of motion, but you know, whatever is there, possibly the joint capsule itself may be a little bit stiff. You may have a forward shoulder kind of situation, and you may have weakness of the scapular retractors and stabilizers. So all that would be the general rule, but definitely have someone take a look at it just to make sure that that's actually what's going on. Kevy.
Cool. Kevy Poe. You want to grab the next question from
Mark? I would love to grab the next question from Mark. I have to scroll down. Hi, Fitcasters. I'm a 25-year-old male, 6'1", 190 pounds, and in the 12 to 15% body fat range. I've lifted weights regularly for the past 5 years. I put on about 20 pounds of fairly lean bulk in that time frame. My goal is to gain mass while maintaining current body fat levels. However, I have much less time to devote to working out due to work and family obligations. I have a gym in the basement that I can do almost every exercise in, but in the interest of time, I've simply developed a push-pull program that I do 4 times a week in the morning before work. I do flat bench, overhead presses, and squats on push day, and bent over rows, chins, and deadlifts on pull days. I usually do 3 sets of 8 for upper body exercises and 3 sets of 10 for lower body exercises. And from week to week, we'll increase weight or reps when possible and mix in a few variations of these exercises. My question is, are these 6 exercises giving me the most bang for the buck? And am I getting enough volume here to make any reasonable gains over time? I understand I can't expect the same results that I earned when I was putting more time into my workouts, but I'd like to maximize what I am doing these 45-minute sessions 4 times a week before work. Over the past few months, I haven't noticed any significant gains in size or strength. Thanks. Keep up the awesome work. That was from Mark.
Great question, Mark. And I think, to be honest, I'm not surprised that you weren't seeing significant gains in strength or size based on what you've told us. Basically, from your email, you've been doing the same thing over and over and over again for the last couple of months. And I think the one thing that just stands out is you need to change things up. You need some kind of, you basically need to change your program around so you have some, John, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Man, it's the morning. What I would recommend is you
variety.
Mix up the variety. Thank you. I want you to mix up the sets and reps a little bit. So you say your goal is still to put on some muscle mass and increase strength. So, you know, one thing I would say is I would say, you know, go a little bit heavier, working in more of those sets of, you know, as long as you feel comfortable working on those sets of 3, sets of 4, sets of 5, sets of 6, working in that kind of range and starting to develop more strength. Otherwise, you're going to be finding yourself sticking with the same weights, picking up those 70-pound dumbbells to do those 3 sets of 8 for that flat bench press every single week. And you're going to just be doing it over and over and over again because there is no variety in your training whatsoever. You also said that you're doing the same exercises week after week. again, just needing to mix it up a little bit, throw in some different variations to those exercises. So, you know, throw in some incline dumbbell bench, maybe some alternating dumbbell bench, throwing in some push-up variations. For the overhead presses, you know, maybe you do alternating dumbbell press, you do some, maybe some curling presses, some stuff like that. And with your squats, again, don't just do back squats, do front squats, do front squat reverse lunges, do lunge variations, do rear foot elevated split squats, tons of different variations for the lower body. And same thing with deadlifts, you know, I hope you see where I'm getting with this, you know, don't just straight bar deadlift, try to do some RDLs or single legged deadlifts, try to, you know, even maybe you, if you, I don't know exactly what you have for equipment. You say you have equipment to do almost anything, but, you know, if you have a cable station, do some pull throughs. If you have some kettlebells, do some kettlebell swings. So I don't want to go through all these exercises, but I hope you understand where I'm coming from, Mark, and just think about what can you do to change things up a little bit. I don't want to use the word muscle confusion. I don't, because I hate that word. But I want you to, you know, one simple way of doing, there's a couple simple ways of doing this. One, buy a good training book like New Rules of Lifting, or you can check out a, you know, exercise program like Turbulence Training, something like that. Or you can, Men's Health has a great book. It's just, it's a book of exercises where you can find, you can kind of page through the book, see what you can do at your house, and again, mix it up. Do some different, you know, horizontal pulling and pushing variations. Do some different lower body work. Do some different core exercises. And I think another thing that I saw in it is there is no core work. So I think that might be one thing that's worth putting in. I don't think it has to be a huge component, but I think it's worth at least addressing, doing some plank variations or even some press out variations. Again, unfortunately, depending on what you have, I do agree that you will get a lot of that core activation from doing your front squats or doing deadlifts and even, you know, even doing chin-ups without swinging around. You'll get some of that core work in, but I think is some direct core work is good to have in there as well, just for safety, you know, just for you know, if you have an extra couple minutes, I know you say you're tight for time, but you know, an extra couple minutes to throw that stuff in. And you know, another great thing to another thing you might want to look at is the 5-3-1 program, because I think it's something that again, if you want something that's kind of written out for you to do, then it has some examples of exercise to do, and it basically just lays it all out, tells you exactly what to do. It's a great program because it's pretty simple. You can get it done relatively quickly. You can get it done in about an hour, and you can always dial things back a little bit. You can get through those main lifts pretty quickly, and you can always dial back the supportive work as well. So, John, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add 2 cents. I think just in general, because this probably comes up a lot with people as far as, oh, you know, change in schedule, or they just don't have a lot of time. And 45 minutes is a pretty decent amount of time, even though it seems like maybe it's not. I think that my workouts are probably no more than about 45, 50 minutes tops, and I'm doing more exercises.
Full body?
No, I'm actually not. Full body is fine, but I have no problem with a push pull upper lower split 4 times a week. And for someone that's a little bit more advanced in training, I think I probably prefer it. Mm-hmm. But what I am looking at, I think you gave some really good advice as far as increasing intensity, and I wanted to really bring that out too. When you decrease volume, if you're decreasing the amount of exercises you do or the amount of time that you're, you know, the number of sets or whatever, it's almost inversely proportioned. I mean, you really need to increase the intensity or increase the frequency over throughout the week if you're going to lower the volume. Volume isn't the most important thing in a workout, and by evidence, it's actually a distant third to intensity and frequency, but it's certainly something to consider. So if I'm dropping a lot of volume, I should make sure that the intensity is up by, like you said, 4, 5, 6 rep sets kinds of things. Work with your rest time, supersetting, compound supersetting, things like that will really buy you a lot of time extra. So you could do like the extra, you know, the ab stuff and things like that. So don't, you know, take a set, rest, back to back and forth kind of stuff really saves you some time. Also, just in general here, the exercises for the most part are fine exercises, but there is an imbalance here, upper to lower. So I would kind of caution against that and have a look at the setup there. You've got two upper body exercises for every lower body, and it could be argued with the deadlift day that you've kind of got three back exercises to the lower body leg exercise, because a deadlift really hammers the hell out of your upper back and traps, and if you're doing it properly, a ton of your lats as well. So I would probably look to add another lower body exercise and during the day as well, just to keep things nice and balanced. And I think that was probably everything that I was thinking about. Yeah, I think that's all I wanted to say.
Cool. If you have anything else, you can always start your own podcast. The next question comes from Matt from Maryland. He says, "Hello, I'm a somewhat new listener, and I haven't managed to listen to all the old podcasts yet, so I'm sorry if this question has already been asked. I work on my feet for 9 hours straight, 5 or 6 days a week. Usually by the time I get off work, I am ready to train. My feet are very sore. My knees, hips, and lower back are also a little stiff and sore. I thought my body would adjust, but after a month at this job, I'm still tired and sore by the time I leave work. It makes it difficult to work as hard as I would like to at the gym. What would you suggest? Are there certain shoes, exercises, or stretches you would recommend? I'm sure anyone who works in a retail job or restaurant can relate, so any help would be greatly appreciated. Thanks."
I think, yeah, the shoes is where I'd probably go first. You need something that's comfortable, something that's probably supportive enough. I mean, that could be an entire discussion in and of itself, is what are the best shoes. But when you're on your feet for that long a period of time, you probably want something that's got at least a little bit of cushion. You may need arch support there. You may not. It's all relative to you. It's the same kind of argument that we talk about when we're like, low shod running shoes when you run. Some people can run with those and some people can't. So the footwear that you've got may or may not be good for you. You could also look into more simple solutions like just Dr. Scholl's inserts and things like that. If the shoes are good or you can afford new shoes or whatever, you could always give that a try. In general, it sounds to me like there is some type of, I mean, it may be postural, it may be endurance work that you need to work on. It may be, believe it or not, your actual form when you're at work, and lifting things and moving things around or whatever. You may not be using the best posture when you do that, and it may be fatiguing you and tiring you. Usually when you have aches and pains like that and you've had it for a decent amount of time where it doesn't seem to be getting better, I'd be kind of curious as to what your actual posture and overall mobility is like. And it's possible that may be impacting you a little bit too. But, 4 weeks of time or whatever is not a huge amount of time to adjust to work environment. It could take a little bit longer, but I'd certainly start being a little bit concerned if you're going weeks and weeks and weeks and you're still just tired and exhausted and not seeming to adapt. So you can also look at things like how much rest are you getting and sleep at night? What's your diet like? Are you getting enough energy? Are you drinking enough liquids? Stuff like that, little odd things that can contribute to overall energy and your ability to recover from a physical job.
Also, I think it's worth looking at insoles like air cushions. Helped me a lot when I worked at Best Buy when I used to work like 9 hour shifts there. And I also used to lift in the morning before work. So I used to just make myself suffer at work instead of at the gym. But that might not be an option for you. So let's go to the next question. John, you're doing good on time?
Yeah, I got about 10, 15 minutes left.
All right, let me bang through this one real quick. I'll just ask it for us ourselves. Hey, Kevin, I have a suggestion for your site. I'm fairly well-versed in fitness and nutrition, but occasionally you or one of your guests will mention terms that I am not familiar with. I typically listen to the show on my iPod while working out, working the assembly line at the local auto factory, and will Google what I can remember when I get home. I thought it would be kind of convenient and informative to all your listeners if you could post a glossary of terms with a brief definition on your website. It would include equipment, exercises, stretches, human anatomy, supplements, and nutrition. I realize you are quite busy and this could take a while, but it could be a work in progress. You might enlist the help of John and Lee. Anyway, just a thought. Love the show. Can't get enough. Regards, Jerry from Nashville. So, interesting you say that. We might be doing something like that.
Oh, yeah?
We talked about this, John.
Did we? I don't remember what we talked about.
I mean, something... okay, well, teaser.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That we did. Yeah. I was watching the series finale of Lost, dude. I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. Just a quick email from Pete Spangler, because I like that his last name is the same as a Ghostbuster.
did he write to us once before?
He did.
Yeah, I thought so. I remember that same comment. Like, oh, cool, it's a Ghostbuster.
Spangler. Basically, he just wanted to... He said that we recommended a website called elitefitness.com. And it is a website that has a bunch of steroids on it. And basically, when we say Elite Fitness or Elite FTS, that's just elitefts.com. That's where Dave Tate and, blanking on names right now. But that's like Dave Tate's website. And you can check out their stuff there. But elitefitness.com is not a website I would ever recommend. I would stay far away from it. Not a good website. So I would recommend you stay away from everything that's sold on that website, Pete. And it's all garbage. So the next question that we will go to. John, do you want to scroll down quite a bit and ask that question from Jared? He's an NASM certified PT.
Oh, that's interesting.
Can see your editing.
There we go.
Bold it for you.
Yeah, it says, what up? He's an NASM certified PT, loves writing programs, but always gets into a brain freeze whenever he thinks about developing a workout for himself. Being fitness professionals, do you write your own personal programs or do you look to others for your own workouts? Are there any resources you frequently use for what you do for yourself? Thanks, guys. The podcast is invaluable. Jared.
I think this is an awesome topic.
It is it's a really good question. Yeah.
And
we had a few really good questions this week on the,
because we have like 50 back emails that I went through to get these questions.
Yeah, they're all really good questions.
So I think the best place to start off with this is, fitness professionals, do they write their own programs? And I think this is a interesting subject because I think some do. And they aren't better for it. And I think sometimes if you are a strength coach or a personal trainer or whatever, if you have someone else that you trust to write a program for you, you're probably going to be more likely to follow something that they give you if you trust them. A great example of this is told this story tons of times, but I tore my pec a couple of weeks back. And ever since then, I've been working off a program that Eric Cressy gave me. Why? Because he works with guys who mess up their shoulders and tear their pecs. So I trust him to give me a program that is going to work well in terms of recovery. So the last couple of weeks, I've been doing a program done by Eric. And I've had great results. And I think... When you get into the territory of making your own programs a lot, it is an interesting territory because you may just slack off and you may change your mind and convince yourself that maybe you should be doing something differently halfway through because you don't – I guess it depends on the person. But for me personally, like I would just say, oh, yeah, I don't really need to do that today or something like that. Or maybe I'll change things up and I'll do way too much and – It's not balanced the way I would like it to be. It's more of like, yeah, I'm just gonna have fun for the next couple of weeks while I get ready for, you know, such and such. But I think it's great if you know a certain guidelines to go by for writing your own programs, and you feel like you're comfortable enough and you're well versed enough, or you saw someone talk and you want to kind of adapt what they told you to write a program. I think it's a great learning tool. It's a great learning experience. And if you're going to do it, keep track of everything you do with yourself. Like, keep every one of those programs. And I think I have every program I've written for myself for the last like 5 years. Like, it's ridiculous to see what I used to write for myself in college and how horrible it was.
It's true.
But I think, you know, keep track of all the weights that you used and see what works. You know, you might go back to something you did 2 years ago and be, oh man, dude, I put 40 pounds on my squat in 2 months when I was doing it like this. Maybe I should go back to doing it like this. Mm-hmm. But in terms of resources that we currently use, I will not lie. I'm extremely fortunate to be able to email John or email Lee or Eric or anyone and be like, you know, what do you think about this in terms of my program? Does it look all right? You know, what do you think? And, you know, it's helped quite a bit.
Yeah. I think that, you know, as far as Brain Freeze about developing the workout for himself, a lot of times the workouts that I do, I almost always write my own workouts. I think the only times I don't is I'll sometimes like borrow, cheat, and steal from other people, but I'll kind of combine it for myself. So I'll take someone's basic workout, but I might change an exercise here or an exercise there based on my own presentation, the things I know about myself. Or I'll do things like GPP workouts. I'll take, oh man, this you know, EDT workout looks crazy. I'm going to do that, you know, for my like cardio conditioning days. I do stuff like that a lot. But in general, for weight stuff, what I tend to do is I'll usually take a look at the workouts that I wrote from my own clients and be like, you know, this one is badass. And I might, again, change like an exercise here or there so it's a little bit more specific to my own needs. But that's how I get around that kind of brain freeze. I already wrote the program. I already balanced things out. You know, everything is kind of together. So I wasn't thinking about myself. I was thinking about writing a good program for someone else. And then, so in a sense, that's almost like if I just, you know, took someone's, you know, workout off the internet, you know, and then I just kind of adjust as I need to. I think the only thing that you have to be really careful about when you write your own programs, assuming that you, you know, are qualified to do that, and we talk about, you know, what might be a good program versus not, is don't get into the habit of doing the things that you like to do. I think that's the worst thing that you're going to do, is you're just going to use the same exercises over and over again because these are the ones you're comfortable with, and you never really go outside of your own comfort zone. So that can be a disadvantage, and I purposely try to program things that I really can't stand doing because otherwise I'll never do them. So that I think is something that you probably should keep your eye out for. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, take inspiration from others, take inspiration from the workouts you've written for other people, you know, absolutely find creative ways to challenge yourself.
You made a great point there, John, just saying to try to program stuff in there that you don't like. Like, I really, really, really hate Bulgarian split squats, are rear foot elevated split squats, but I just did them yesterday and my ass hurts.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also try to mix in a little bit of fun with any, you know, with any program, right, whether it be for me or for a client. I try to mix in a little bit of fun and, you know, just making sure you can actually stay sane while doing it. John, how you doing on time?
I think we're done. Yeah, maybe 5 minutes.
Let's wrap it up. All right. So
I can't believe you skipped the one that I wanted to give the Pink Dumbbell Award to.
Yeah, we're going to save it for next week.
All right, cool. That'll get Pink Dumbbell next week.
Yeah.
All right, so then you know what? So then I would say that maybe Jared is the recipient.
I agree.
All right, very good. All those in favor? Aye.
Nay.
Dumbass. Congratulations, Jared.
You did it, Jed. Go get a Subway sub when you're done. Wear your t-shirt. Yeah. All right, so
just never heard that joke before, Kev. Good job.
Okay. So, again, thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We have Martin Rooney coming up in just a couple of seconds. Please don't forget to check out theficast.com, where you can use that very convenient Flash audio player on that right side to listen to the show while you're at work. And you can also subscribe through iTunes, where we'd love it when you guys throw up reviews. Anything we can do to get ahead of Tracy Anderson's podcast, we love you for.
Please tell me that she's not ahead of us. She's got to be, right? She is. Ah, that wonderful
human
educator.
Being.
Yeah.
And
she does a lot of research. It's amazing how successful she's been.
I got some emails from people supporting her these last couple of weeks.
Awesome. Please forward them.
Okay. And how we shouldn't talk badly. But
right. Right.
Because, you know, she's right. You know, if you lift a lot on one side. Okay.
Whatever.
And does anyone really think that Madonna and Gwyneth Paltrow are hot? I thought Gwyneth was R-rated in Iron Man 2. But that's the only movie I could ever stand her in. And I was like, her next to Scarlett Johansson, I'm like, get out of the way.
Mm.
Let Scarlett Johansson stand in front of you the whole movie.
See, but I think Scarlett's training with her too. Now they all train.
No.
I think so. I could be wrong about that, but I thought I read something. I don't know.
As long as Val keeps Jessica Biel, I'm cool. Val's got to keep Jessica Biel, and don't, you know, that then we're cool. Yeah. Keep her doing those leg curls.
Yeah, we'll have to do a whole. I mean, it's like just when you think that the topic is just beaten to the ground, it's like a whole new group of support or another friggin' article comes out on her, and you're just like, really? Like,
for reals?
For reals, yo.
And I would love it if you guys checked out KevinLurie.com, where I'm actually blogging there again. Some good stuff going up there last week on warming up when you're short on time, and also something that has to do with a Catalina wine mixer.
Mm.
Which is always a good time. How does that not make you laugh, John? Come on, it's a Catalina wine mixer.
It's all my Zen training, dude.
Been snapping necks and cashing checks. I think we have a name for the podcast this week. I don't know.
Wow. No.
Probably should have something to do with our guests. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate everything.
Well, that kind of does have to do with the guests because it's MMA.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't do it. Yeah, don't use it, though. It sounds, I don't know.
All right, if I see you guys at Perform Better Seminar, hi. And I was glad to meet you. And that's it. We hope you guys have a great week. Here is Martin Rooney, and then we're going to talk to PJ Street. John, do you have any last words before we let the music go into Martin?
No.
Right now I'm with Martin Rooney. He's a performance enhancement specialist with a Master's of Health Science and Bachelor's of Physical Therapy degrees from the Medical University of South Carolina. He also holds a Bachelor of Arts in Exercise Science from Furman University. Martin is a licensed physical therapist in New Jersey, a certified strength and conditioning specialist under the NSCA, and a certified personal trainer under the National Association of Sports Medicine. He has also been certified in active release technique, or ART, for the upper extremity and certified in the lower extremity by the Institute of Flexibility Sciences. Martin, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. It's a huge pleasure to get you on. I'm really excited to do the interview.
Hey, great to be here, Kevin. No, it sounds like you did your research. I haven't heard that much read about me in a while, at least from my academic background, that's for sure.
I tried to do a little bit of prep time. I tried to make it somewhat professional, but I think, you know, where I would love to start off is, you know, tell the audience a little bit more about yourself. And also, you know, if people haven't been following you, I know you've been traveling a lot. If you could talk a little bit about that as well.
Sure. Well, other history on myself besides the academics is I consider myself to have a neat mix of the academic but also the athletic experience as well, even before I got into training, where I was a Division I college scholarship athlete through the javelin in track and field, and I also ran as well. And then I was on the U.S. bobsled team after the medical university. I was on the U.S. bobsled team for 3 years and got to travel the world representing the U.S., but also live at the Olympic Training Center and really be exposed to training at the highest level and train alongside some of the best athletes in the world. And after that experience, I got into the martial arts pretty deeply and became deeply entrenched with the Gracie family, the originators of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, started training fighters over 12 years ago, and that's led to some amazing experiences as well. And now I'm currently the chief operating officer of the Parisi Speed School. I've helped to build the national franchise, which we now have 56 locations in 26 states, and we've impacted over 250,000 young athletes. So that, you know, at least to give a little bit of that information, I feel it rounds off as much as the academia, where, you know, I want everybody to see that, hey, it's great to have certifications and be well-read, but I believe that the practical experience is just as important. And when you have both, that's when you're really cooking with gas.
How do you feel about people that are trying to get into the field? This is a question that we do get a lot. And you mentioned about that hands-on experience. You know, what do you recommend in terms of continuing education, in terms of like internships or getting a GA position? You know, what do you think is the best path for people that are looking to get in the field?
Well, I guess the best path is the one that people feel the best about. I mean, my first piece of advice is always to see what you're most passionate about and see where you can spend the most time in that area. For instance, as you said, I was a physical therapist, and although I enjoyed it, I just knew deep down in my gut that that wasn't what I really wanted to do. I was impacting people, but I wasn't impacting enough people. I didn't feel that that was where I could really reach my potential, and that's how I made the leap. So my leap was I left physical therapy. Bill Parisi had a van driving around in an industry that didn't exist, thinking he could get kids faster and stronger, and it caught me, and I took the risk and jumped to it. You know, I was living in a guy's basement, eating tuna to stay alive, and we threw this thing. But that came with tons and tons of experience. We did just free demos, and we did free team camps. We would do anything we could to get in front of people because we were so passionate about what we did. And so, again, long story short, man, whatever your passion is, go soak for it. So, hey, if your passion is collegiate athletics, then yeah, go get a GA position and get your degree while you work. If your passion is therapy, then start volunteering in the therapy clinic while you're working and see if that's really what you want to do. If your passion is kids, hey, check out a program like ours, the Parisi Speed School, or something where you can really get hands-on and really see if it's what you love. If your passion is the private sector or adult fitness, then find what gym is the best and go after it. But the ultimate advice is whatever it is you really love to do or you believe you love to do, go figure out a way to make money doing it, because you can do it, and it's just so much better than just doing something you don't love to do. Just you can get money and do what you do love to do a little bit on the weekend, if that helps at all.
You, and again, jumping off the continuing education, this upcoming weekend, or I guess by the time that people hear this, it's already happened, but the Perform Better Summit's coming up in Providence. And, again, the Perform Better Summits, if people don't know what they really are, they have the one day and then the summits are 3 days. And Martin, you're actually going to be presenting there. You pretty excited for coming over to the East Coast, or I guess really coming over to New England?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, I believe this is either my fifth or my sixth year on the Perform Better Tour. I don't think there's a better event for somebody being able to have an opportunity to see so many different great minds in the field, as well as different topics or ranges of topics. So anybody that gets a chance to come out to it, I mean, I think it's something like 40 different presenters over a three-day span, where there are lectures and hands-ons and your ability to just network with other like minds in the industry, as well as in your possible communities as well. So I definitely believe that, you know, if we're talking about continuing education, the Perform Better events are just amazing. And not just because I've been part of them, because I will say that I used to go to them before I was presenting at them, and definitely going to them is what helped lead me to be presenting at them. So without a doubt, if you can get to something like that, that is, you get a potpourri of all the stuff you could possibly be interested in, and it's all in one place, in one weekend, and I don't know of any other scenario like that in the industry.
Yeah, it's I'm extremely excited. I can't wait for this upcoming weekend. Or I guess again, you know, it's hard to talk and with you know deal with the tenses here. But I guess this has already happened for the people when they actually hear this interview. But for Martin and I, it is it's in the future. It's a couple of days in the future. But Martin, I want to talk a little bit more about kind of what you've been doing. And you know, first, I love to ask this question to our guests, but what's really piqued your interest in the field? And you know, we're talking a little bit earlier before the show, and you read a ton. So what's been kind of piquing your interest, and what have you been digesting in terms of information?
Well, in terms of, I guess, like we had talked about, Kevin, there's a lot of different areas, but one, I've been really spending a lot of time. A lot of people ask me, they say, "Hey, you read a lot of training stuff," and actually, the answer is no. I mean, I've spent so much. I spent the last decade reading so much training stuff that now I'm really reading other areas of whether it be science or just different concepts that now I'm applying to my training. So for instance, I've been reading a lot lately. I've been really, really interested in a topic which I guess is controversial, but not the way that I've always seen or how I've been reading it. I've been reading a lot about evolution. I've been reading a ton in quantum mechanics and quantum physics. And those two topics, I actually did an article on elitefitnesssystems.com that has garnered a lot of attention. Many people have said it's the best thing they've read in a long time, which I used kind of the evolutionary concepts that I've been reading about but applying them to training and how we train today. And then what I'm actually presenting on for Perform Better is actually a culmination of a lot of the stuff that I've been reading in quantum physics and quantum mechanics and trying to get my hands around that to understand it, but also how to apply that to our training as well. And I feel that between those two topics, I've got some really, really cool cutting-edge stuff that really should give people those aha moments. I mean, when I present or when I write, I really want to leave people with something. I want to, in some capacity, blow them away. You know, just even in this interview, I want people to say, wow, I need to investigate more, or this guy got me on the path to something that I know I should be chasing. And those two topics in particular, where there are endless numbers of books on them, and there are two topics that are, not that they're difficult to understand, but, you know, maybe depending on who you read, they might have a difficult time making it simple enough for you. But those two would be the areas that I've been reading the most on probably in the last year that have really piqued my interest. And I've definitely taken things away from it that you would never think and applied it to training.
So I think it's pretty fair to officially call you a nerd. But I think that's awesome because, you know, especially when you bring up quantum mechanics, I think the only time I can actually digest that information, and that's on top of all the sci-fi that I actually watch, but, you know, they have tons of stuff on PBS, on like Nova, on quantum mechanics, and basically the universe that we know so little about. And again, for people out there who haven't checked out the article, it's at EliteFTS.com. It's called Evolution Revolution, My Manifesto. So you can check it out at EliteFTS.com. You can't miss it. But I think that is, you know, it's super cool. And it's very interesting to hear you kind of, you know, to be honest, we talked to a lot of coaches and, you know, they'll hear them talk about, you know, I'm not reading many training books, but now I'm reading marketing books. And to hear you say, you know, I'm not reading as much training because I've digested so much of the training stuff, I'm actually looking into quantum mechanics and evolution. I think that's awesome. I just think that's really cool.
Well, you know, remember, it's all science, you know, and hey, I'm not against marketing books or business books. I think everybody needs to succeed there as well.
Totally.
But I'm trying to take, you know, and I believe that, hey, in training, you've got to have that information. And I'm not going to say that I haven't read tons of books in those topics either. But at heart, I believe if I'd call myself a scientist, but I love science. And nerd, it probably isn't far off with a lot with the term. I just maybe come in a shape that maybe some people don't think a nerd usually is. But I'm proud to, you know, I'm proud to be called a nerd where, you know, I really enjoy reading and I really enjoy new concepts and being able to apply them and then share them with other people. And in particular, like I said, those were two topics that I've been really investigating, as well as we had talked about, I've been traveling over the last 3 years extensively all over the world to really see exactly what people are doing, in other countries for training. And over the last 3-year adventure, I've been really surprised on what I found.
Let's talk a little bit more about evolution, and I don't mean to use the pun, but let's talk about the evolution of what you've been doing in terms of training your athletes. What have you guys been doing differently these last 6 months or the last year, or what have you changed in terms of the programming or the really kind of the blueprint for what you guys do?
Well, obviously, you know, the evolution is a great word where, you know, even in my training system, I mean, we're all on a path. I mean, there is no best, I guess, is a great way to look at it, where so we should always all be striving for better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it, ultimately we have to recognize that we're always undergoing an evolution. So our programming is never complete, and they're always not that they're always new ideas, but there may be ideas that you don't know yet that are new to you that maybe have been around forever, or it may be time to remove some things from your training protocols that now you don't do as much of or have as much faith in. And you know, I guess that's kind of the evolution of how somebody's training goes. In particular with my athletes, I guess it depends on the athletes that I'm working with. For instance, I'm pretty well known for my NFL combine athletes. I'm also pretty well known for my MMA athletes, where I've written a couple of books, one called Training for Warriors and my newest book, Ultimate Warrior Workouts, just came out a couple of weeks ago. Those two are in particular MMA, and not just for MMA athletes, but those books are for anybody that wants that MMA physique or wants to have that warrior mentality, even if you don't want to get punched in the face or have cauliflower ears. But so in particular there, what I'd say is, I guess the evolution of my MMA training is that it's actually backing down a little bit in terms of overall intensity, where I've really gone through the, you know, entire continuum of all the things that I could do with my fighters. I've gone through the killer circuits, or what I call hurricane training. I've gone through making many of the exercises very sports specific, actually even having kicking and punching and sparring within the training. And I've started to see that, I guess, in my approach, I'm now applying what I call more of a generalistic approach, where I'm now saying, hey, my job is to get this athlete stronger. My job is to improve this athlete's endurance. My job is to improve this athlete's flexibility and to improve their mental strength. But my job is not to make them a better fighter. My job is not to make them technically better as a fighter, although I could probably do that in some capacity. And my job is not just to beat them down into the ground because I believe MMA is tough, so that's what I should do. And, you know, so I've really evolved to where now so much more just pure strength training, absolute strength work, as well as really understanding the cardiovascular demands of the sport and how to apply that to my athletes without wearing them out so they can't exercise for the rest of the week. So I'm continuing to refine that system, and we're continuing to have better and better results in terms of body compositional changes, strength gains, and just success, you know, overall, I guess, in the ring. But ultimately, you know, I can't claim to say, hey, because I've trained my fighters, that's why they win. I can only say that I'm assisting with their attributes to hope that they win. So, you know, long story short, I guess I'm every year I continue to understand the fight game even better. And it's been 12 now that I've been around it. And, you know, I'm always continuing to improve and refine and just make sure that I understand my job and what my role really is. And the better I've gotten at that, the crisper the program has become.
One of our listeners, Dave, has a question for you. He says he's a longtime fan from your time at Elite Fitness, and he's pre-ordered your book and can't wait to get it. So he says, my question is about your various warrior challenges. My training is strength-focused, and I have been using the 5-3-1 program for some time now with great success. Where you suggest one puts the various warrior challenges into an existing program. At the beginning of a session, kind of smokes the rest of the workout, but if you wait until the end of a session, you can't do the challenge justice. Thanks, and thanks, Martin. And again, that's from Dave. And Martin, if you could talk a little bit about what the warrior challenges are, and also this would be a great time to kind of talk a little bit about the book and what people can expect as well.
Sure. Well, in my new book, Ultimate Warrior Workouts, I spent the last 3 years, I traveled to 13 different countries, and I investigated the martial arts that make up MMA to to not only better understand those, so I could understand better the philosophy and the technical aspects of them and how they're used in MMA, but also how these athletes physically trained in other countries. So, for instance, I went to Thailand, I went to Japan, I went to Brazil, I went to England, I went to Holland, I went to Finland and Denmark, I went to Mexico, I traveled across the United States. I don't know what I'm leaving out there, but definitely a lot of different countries and a lot of different views on training. And what I experienced was there were many, many body weight challenges that these athletes put themselves through all the time. And after seeing it all, I came up with what we call our warrior challenges. And these are just physical tests using the body weight that can be scored, and you can actually rate yourself according to the top mixed martial artists in the world. So, for instance, Frank Yeager, who recently won the UFC title over BJ Penn in what some call the greatest upset in UFC history, Frankie's numbers, which are probably some of the best that I've ever tested, his numbers in this new book are what you get to, you know, probably the upper level of how you get to rate yourself. But what these challenges do is they give you a set time limit, and then you have to complete a certain number of repetitions of different exercises, and the form is all outlaid. And according to how you score, you get to see where you stand. And then the 6-month workout contained in the book helps you to not only improve on those challenges, but improve your overall fitness. But going back to Dave's original question, I know exactly what he's asking. Because, for instance, one of the simplest tests is just the 4-minute push-up challenges. How many push-ups can you do in 4 minutes? And most people think, oh, I can do hundreds, where most people I experience barely get more than 50. And what happens, though, is once you gas yourself, whether you get 50 or you get 100, if you're not trained, you could be wiped out. So the first thing I would say is, Dave, if you're not doing these challenges ever or training at all with push-ups or other things, yeah, it's going to smoke you for your workout. If you are training with at least the system that I've put together, then it can be something that you can test before a workout and still get everything else in. If you want to stay with your existing workout, but you still want to test yourself according to the challenges, what I would recommend is putting the individual challenge on a day that you're not actually working out. So, for instance, say you were working out Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or something like that, then, hey, throw in the challenge on a Wednesday or throw in the challenge on a Saturday. And this way, you're rested, you get to test yourself, you're not ruining a workout. Throw me in a 3-minute challenge or a 4-minute challenge, and some of them are only 2 minutes. You won't really wear yourself out that you're not, you know, that you're killing yourself on your rest day. But what I'm excited to hear is once everybody gets the book and starts really going through it, you know, which already it's only been out for just exactly, I think, 3 weeks or coming up on 3 weeks, and it's already at 5,000 copies sold. So really aggressive sales right now. So I'm excited and getting a lot of great feedback, but I can't wait for everybody to start testing themselves so I can see how everybody stands.
I saw that it was available on Amazon.com. Would that be the best place for people to pick it up?
Yeah, Amazon.com. Guys, it's a 384-page, full-color, full-glossy book, hundreds of exercises, diet plan, 6-month workout, and it's $19.79 on Amazon. So, I mean, I don't know what – I'm as bold to say I don't think there's many books like this one that was a 3-year project that cost over $150,000 to put together that you can get for $19. So hopefully, yeah, I haven't heard anybody call me yet and say they felt ripped off. Where I think it cost more than $19 to go see Iron Man 2 right now. So, you know, so I mean, I know we're not cheating anybody, because my publishing house, HarperCollins, they actually wanted to publish a book for $39, and I said no way. It has to be $29 because that's the same price for all the other books in the same genre. And they didn't agree, but that's what I wanted to do, and I did it for everybody so it would be something affordable so people could get it. And then, you know, it's only 19 online, where, man, you just can't beat that. So I hope everybody checks it out.
Just to give people a heads up, again, it is available on Amazon. You can pick it up there. The reviews have been outstanding so far. Obviously, co-host of the show, Lee Peel, I also gave it a glowing review, and I have to ask you, Martin. I mean, I've talked to a couple of people that have written books before. Does it feel weird to think that, you know, literally years of work is only costing people $20?
Yes and no. I mean, I guess it's more weird that it's finally done. I mean, it was such an adventure traveling to all those countries, and and just months and months out of the U.S. and just all the writing, everything that happened, that it's kind of finally here. And you know, so it's almost harder for me to believe that it's out. It's on the shelves everywhere. But then when you say, yeah, it's only $19, and that people sometimes, I guess, can complain about that, yeah, that would kind of drive me nuts. Where, I mean, if, you know, if they saw how I suffered, say, like in Russia or in Thailand and just some of the countries that we went to and all the planning and all the stuff that went into it, you know, I did it for everybody to enjoy, and I did it as a book to create that there would be so much information that they got with it. And I just wanted to, in any product that I do, I want to always over deliver from the last one that I did. And man, for less than $20, I mean, you just can't go wrong. So, you know, I just, like I said, I guess I just hope everybody enjoys it. And it doesn't drive me nuts that it's $20. It actually makes me feel great that it's $20, because everybody will get a chance to see it.
Continuing on talking about the travels, I hope I have this name right. I'm going to say Yoni from Finland asks, Mr. Rooney, greetings from Finland, and thanks for your great seminar over here during the last fall. Question, based on your excursions across the globe, what is the one main thing you've learned from overseas that you could take back to the States to help your athletes get better results? Also, on the same token, what is one thing you would take from North American training systems to improve European training systems? Thank you in advance and looking forward to seeing you in 4 weeks. But I think this question was from a couple weeks ago, but, and I'm hoping he's talking about the Perform Better seminar.
Yeah, well, it probably is. It's funny. I have a Finnish contingent coming in on Thursday, and I'm going to be training them, and then we're all heading up to Providence on that Thursday because I present this coming Friday. But and I've been to Finland the last 3 years, and I've presented for the Finnish Coaches Association a number of times. I've been invited to present for the Olympic coaches this October, so I'm really, really excited about that opportunity too. But to answer the question, Yoni, I guess I would say it's kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a reciprocal answer, but it's almost as if I went everywhere I went in the world, besides here, there was so much more body weight work going on. And yet here we have so much, you know, we have gyms and so much technology, where the other places use so much body weight work and creativity. And I guess the body weight work and the creativity is the stuff that I brought back here. But if I was to bring stuff to those other countries, I would bring some of the equipment and the gyms and stuff like that that don't exist. So it's almost, I like the blend of both together, where it seems, you know, whether here, it was almost an all or none proposition here or there. Where there, they didn't have fantastic gyms and lots of equipment and really clean stuff and weights. And there, they did body weight. Here, we've got tons of gyms and tons of equipment and $10,000 pieces of machinery. And yet nobody can do a push-up here in this country anymore, or, you know, a lunge. So it's almost like I would kind of, you know, blend them both together. So I brought back tons of the bodyweight stuff, and I'm getting amazing results with everybody with it. And then, but there, I also noticed that everybody was a little bit smaller, and everybody could definitely be a little bit stronger, where maybe if they had some more equipment over there, they would be able to do that as well. And then probably the final piece, too, is everybody everywhere else I went eats a whole lot cleaner than we do here. And, you know, I would definitely bring back some of the just the cleaner eating and the cleaner food as well, if that would be possible too.
So you're saying we shouldn't? I mean, I guess we already did bring Big Macs overseas, but you know, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they're there. I mean, they're there, and not only that, but yeah, when I was in Finland in particular, in Helsinki, man, you know, because the time schedule is so off that sometimes I would be up so late, and not only is it the only place to get something to eat, almost like McDonald's, but I would watch. And, you know, a half hour long line of people just standing out there dying to get on to eat it, where I'm pretty sure we wouldn't do that in the States. So not only is it over there now, but it's in some capacity a novelty, where maybe, you know, I know in Brazil too, we're fattening everybody up with the fast food that we're spending down. So, you know, so it's like maybe, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, we would bring the clean food here, but not bring the bad food everywhere else. But definitely, you know, westernizing people's diets is not always the best thing. And but maybe westernizing them with a little bit of training information, I do feel that we do have a lot of great stuff to offer, because we are so creative as Americans. We are so technologically always pushing the envelope in the equipment that we create and the things that we have, that there is so much of it that is useful that that other countries could benefit from it, that they just don't have it or they don't have the resources.
So, I mean, just kind of recapping, basically the overseas equipment isn't as prevalent, so that's pretty much why they're using more body weight stuff, or is it because they're finding it just more effective for the training?
I would say, you know, you answered it all right there. It's definitely not more prevalent. Even when I was on the U.S. bobsled team, we were traveling, there weren't gyms, there weren't places to train you. We'd be doing body weight work, using partner exercise, we'd do anything we could just to get some resistance passing through our bodies. And I think, you know, hey, you can call it old school or not, but I believe that, say, it's Europe or other countries, they found that it's also effective, you know, and so it's the kind of thing that in the end you may not need a bunch of fantastic equipment and you can still succeed and be really fit. You know, and so I guess it maybe as an American ideal, it's almost like you got to have tons of weights or you got to have tons of equipment to be big and strong, where, you know, maybe that's not the case, as well as, man, these other countries I went to, there was amazing amounts of flexibility and even a lot of times more coordination and coordinated movements, because it was almost like gymnastics and body weight versus here we're just sagittal plane motions with lots of weight. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the answer is on making the best athlete, but I know that, you know, these other countries have some really cool stuff to offer.
Yeah. I totally lost my train of thought, but I was going to ask you, that's what it was. So in terms of the bodyweight training, was there anything that was particularly interesting that you saw that you're just like, how did we never think of this? Or why aren't we doing this back in the States?
Remember, a lot of my time was spent with martial artists or inside dojos or in advanced training halls with athletes. I'll say this, in Russia, I trained with an entire group, and every guy could do a full split. And
wow.
When I'm here, I don't really know any guys that can do a full split. You know, and I work with all the top martial artists here. When I was in Japan, they were using such creative activities, using their partners as body weight. Now, granted, judo is an event where you got to use the partner or, you know, your competitor as the body weight, but there were a lot of stuff that they did with that. In Thailand, I saw some really, really interesting stuff that they did to strengthen their necks, as well as, you know, I guess in unison with their jaw, which, you know, in some capacity makes sense for being less prone to get knocked out, as well as being way stronger in the clinch. You know, in Brazil, it was, man, just chin-ups. I mean, every 100 yards on the beach, there was chin-up bars and dips bars, and everybody was using them. And we just don't see that kind of physical culture in our country. So almost everywhere I went, I saw different things, but it was always about using that most important piece of equipment you have, and that's your body. And it didn't rely on, you know, what new fantastic piece of equipment you had that you have to clean every 10 seconds by spraying it down. You know, it was mm-hmm. It was more, you know, it was just out there in the raw, but people were training and people were fit. And I guess that would be the biggest thing that I brought back, is everywhere I went, I just saw that there was a value on physical attributes that maybe we don't value as much here in the States. So it's almost like then what we value as a culture becomes what we develop. So what do Americans value? Man, we value big arms, and we value, you know, hey, strength or being tough. And whereas, man, in Finland and Russia, it was about flexibility and just, you know, coordination and their abilities just to do, you know, back handsprings and roundoffs and cartwheels. These were the guys. It was just, man, this is not stuff that we're raised with here in our physical culture. So it's almost like the countries value different stuff, and it creates a physical culture that is different everywhere I went.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've been able to kind of see the body weight stuff firsthand. But at the end of each one of our sessions at Mike Boyle's, we do this thing called the Bodyweight 100, which is basically, it's just what it sounds. It's a bodyweight circuit of 100 reps. And in just doing 100 reps, you see kids get challenged like they never have been challenged before. And it's just a completely different beast than, you know, doing a normal regular set and then going on to a different exercise and kind of having a little bit of rest in between as you rotate through the kids. So no, it's very interesting that you say that, Martin. I think that's really cool. And it's another reason for people, you know, I don't mean to talk about it too much, but it's another reason to pick up the book. If you're kind of training at home a lot and wanting to do more bodyweight stuff, it will definitely benefit. Let's go to the next question from Brian Sargent. He wanted to make sure I got this question in. He let me know a couple times through the various Facebooks and email. He says, the last time I saw you in person as well as in your book, you talked a lot about how the culture of martial arts as a whole has a risk of fading away in the new evolution of mixed martial arts. A lot of focus on fighting and conditioning, but not a lot of focus on things like tradition, honor, self-respect, and other things covered through the various martial arts systems mentioned in your book, Ultimate Warrior Workouts. My question is, what are some things that people or trainers can do to instill these values in a mixed martial arts world or environment so as to not lose sight of what MMA is truly rooted in? Second and thirdly, do you use the TRX either in your warrior programs or in other programs at the Parisi Speed School? And third, I am still a bit gimpy from an injury to my anterior shoulder and bicep tendon. It was mostly a strain and not a tear. As there are any particular exercises that should be reinforced to not just to my injury, but for others who increase overall shoulder health. And Brian, I'm sorry, but we are going to skip that third question. We're just going to stick with the first question and the question about TRX. So, Martin, what do you think?
Well, and hey, I know Brian, or AKA Sarge. He drove a long way down to see me, so I'm glad to hear another question for him. So I want to give him a shout-out because this is a guy that has got a really cool personal story really transformed himself and is using a lot of that information to help others. So my hat's off to him. But what he brought up the first part, which, and I'm glad he got that from what I was talking about is, as I also travel the world and other history about myself too, I am a black belt in judo. I'm a purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I train pretty extensively in Muay Thai as well and had wrestled growing up. So I really I have a lot of experience with the martial arts. So this last 12 years has been spent not only training martial arts, but also training in the martial arts. And it's really not only led to a number of the incredible experiences in my life and my ability to travel and things that I've seen, but it really helped me to personally develop myself as well. And so many of the maxims that I gained from the martial arts about things that Brian had talked about with honor and respect and discipline and mutual benefit and the ability to work well with others, work ethic. These are what I believe are the central pieces of the martial arts. And when martial arts began to grow in the United States, I believe that these were the reasons that parents brought their kids to these programs. And unfortunately today, which is interesting, is mixed martial arts, as it becomes its own art form, I guess you could call that, it's an amalgamation or a bringing together of or a culmination of all the different martial arts. But what's interesting is when, I don't know why this is, but when you throw in judo, which is, just steeped in so much honor and respect and discipline and principle, and then karate, the same thing, and even wrestling has it, and jiu-jitsu has it, and all these sports, the sweet science of boxing and Muay Thai with its history and legacy, and you put all these things together, they have so many great things, and unfortunately, in some way or some reason, it's like as if they all, in some capacity, disappeared. Whereas almost we put it all together, and now mixed martial arts, unfortunately, in some ways, when I see how it's going, is a whole lot more about beating people up or blood and guts or just a lot of negative words and these are not the things that I guess that's what I get least excited about the sport for. And hey, there are some guys there's some guys at the head of the game that are bringing some of that back. But I would love to see more of it where what Brian's hinting at is how do we instill that as trainers instead of jumping on the bandwagon and maybe, just get, buying the first shirt that says death, rage, or hate or something on it and getting that and, calling ourselves a mixed martial artist. So my advice on how to do this would be exactly what I did. One, whether it's you immerse yourself in the arts or you immerse yourself in topics like respect or honor or discipline or work ethic, and you have to really decide what they mean, and you've got to define them for yourself, and really come up with your core values, your purpose, your character. And once you've decided on all these things and you really understand them and you have a handle on them, then you can give them to somebody else. It's almost as if, if we look at, whether you want to say the Karate Kid with Mr. Miyagi or whoever that mentor or master is that you've had, we're all searching for that person, but we're searching for that person because they have more information than we do. And so what my advice would be for Brian or anybody else out there is you've got to seek it out first. You gotta seek it out. You gotta do the study. You gotta really, you know, create these characteristics about yourself that you can, so that you can eventually give them to somebody else. So ultimately, in answering that one, I believe that MMA is in its infancy. It's still in its adolescence. I mean, some of these other martial arts are hundreds, thousands of years old, and MMA is essentially not even 20 years old. So, hey, we can. It's okay where it's going. It's just, you know, if everybody takes a part in it, we can continue to develop all the things that make it great, and I believe it'll only attract more people. Now, the second question, I think, which was about the TRX, you know, I have a lot of tools in my gym, tons of different tools, and the TRX, we have it in our gym, and it's something that I have used before, but it's a tool that I use, I guess you could say sparingly, but so are so many of the tools that I have. So we have sleds, I use those, hey, sparingly. We have hammers, I use those sparingly. Kettlebells, we use those sparingly, and the TRX is another one of those tools that, yeah, we utilize, but it's not an entire, I guess, an entire program in itself, if that's one way to describe it, but something that I consider a valuable tool that is used in our facility every day. So hopefully that answers that one too.
And lastly, to wrap it up, there's no way you're excited for the new Karate Kid, correct?
I'm such a fan, and I've said this, but I'm such a fan of the original. As not only did I grow up watching it, but now having kids, we watch it and they love the original. And, mm-hmm. Hey, I don't really know anything about the new one. I know it's Jackie Chan and Will Smith's kid, and he definitely looks a whole lot younger, and it's probably going to be a whole lot, hopefully, of a different story or something. Maybe they should have called it the Kung Fu Kid or something, and then it would have been different. But I don't think anything will ever be able to outdo the magic of, Ralph Macchio, Pat Morita, how they did it. I mean, you know, it's just an incredible movie. And, hey, I hope that this movie, at best, I hope this movie inspires a generation like the first one did. But I don't think there'll ever be anything that can replace that movie for me, no matter how good they try to make it.
I just don't know how it's going to be as good if they can't fit in the line, sweep the leg, Johnny. It's just not going to be able to live up to it.
Yeah. Well, hey, there's a lot of lines in there. And actually, you know, it's kind of funny. Well, like I said, now my kids, I mean, literally we had movie night, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, and we watched it, and they're riveted, and they're little kids. And there's just something that they got out of that. It's just, it's a pretty, pretty cool movie. But like I said, hey, in hopes of this new generation of kids that's out, hopefully it does wow them and capture them the same way. Because, you know, hey, Jackie Chan, he's got a lot of, personality and fire. Hopefully it does good.
Wrapping up, Martin, where can people check out some more of your stuff? Where's the best place to get some more information on you if they would, pick up the book and they want to just check out some more of your stuff down the road?
Yeah, well, hey, I have a free YouTube channel. It's TF Warriors 1. You can check out. I've got over, I think, 15 hours of videos on there. A lot of people really like those. My websites are policingschool.com and trainingforwarriors.com. The trainingforwarriors.com is a free site that it's like a YouTube and a Facebook all together in one. But you know, about training, and people can put in their own videos, put in their own information. There's forums and blogs, really neat community, and a lot of sharing going on there. I think there's over 12,000 members now signed in and using it all the time, which is neat. And then finally, guys, you can, like I said, you can check out my books. They're on Amazon.com. I have videos on the ParisiSchool.com, which some of those have sold, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies now in the total amount of the different DVDs that we have. And always have gotten so much feedback. So if you're interested in different speed training or strength training concepts or warm-up techniques, there's so many videos there for everybody to check out as well. And then finally, hey, I'm on Facebook. It's where I really have learned to communicate with a lot of people. It's almost become like my new internet. So, you know, definitely everybody can find me there too. And I'm always looking forward to helping out as many people as I can.
Absolutely. And, you know, I... I'm really excited. I can't wait to see you this upcoming weekend at Perform Better. And again, Martin, it's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope we can have you on again sometime down the road.
Without a doubt, we'll do it, Kevin, and best of luck to you. And hey, I'll see you in a few days.
Absolutely, thank you, Martin. With me right now is PJ Street. I've been trying to get PJ on for a while. It's been my fault. I know I mentioned on the show earlier, but it's been my fault. I've had some scheduling issues. But PJ, I'm very happy to finally get you on the show and talk to you. How you been?
I'm great, Kevin. And just for the record, I've been listening to the FitCast for years, and I'm a huge fan, so I'm honored to be on the show.
Well, I appreciate that. And first off, let's just tell the audience a little bit about you, if you don't mind. First, we'll give people a heads up. If you want to get some information on PJ, there's a couple places you can go immediately. That's CincinnatiFitnessTrainer.com and also PersonalTrainerCincinnati.com. And he's also got a great YouTube channel at YouTube.com/IronStreet, and that's STRIET. So,
right.
PJ, tell us a little bit about you. You know, where you've been, where you're going, and what you're doing now.
Well, Kevin, I kind of got hooked on the fitness stuff way back when I was about 9 or 10 years old. I got a Hulk Hogan dumbbell set for Christmas.
I was going to ask you about that. I got to hear about this.
Yeah, man, it was. I remember vividly. I was a big pro wrestling nut. I mean, I was just obsessed with it. So, my mom got me the Hulkamania blue dumbbell set. It came with, you know, 2 10-pound blue dumbbells and a Hulkamania headband, a weight training belt. And, an audio tape that, you know, the Hulkster gave you some positive reinforcement. So I was up in my bedroom, you know, training, saying my prayers, eating my vitamins. And I just remember early on that, it was an activity that I took to, I think Zach Evanish said it beautifully when he said, you know, training's an activity where you can lose yourself and find yourself at the same time. And I remember even way back when, you know, 10 years old in my bedroom, you know, pumping out curls, that statement really resonated with me, because I remember even back then that I just found that the activity was very therapeutic for me, even at a young age. So, long story short, I took to it early on. When I got into high school, I played a number of team sports, and we were one of the first high schools, probably in the country, to have an organized strength conditioning program and an actual strength coach. So, you know, we had a 3,000, 4,000 square foot training facility, and we had a great strength coach. And by the time I got to my junior and senior year, I liked training for the sports more than I liked playing the sports. So I kind of knew this was the direction I wanted to go, and went to Miami University of Ohio, majored in exercise physiology, and I started training people when I was 18 years old. Did it throughout college. You know, my idea of fun in college was to go to strength conditioning seminars. I mean, I'd go to seminars, and, you know, big-time D1 strength coaches and pro strength coaches would be speaking, and I idolize these guys, you know, a lot like, you know, kids our age, you know, 17, 18 years old might idolize a rock star or, you know, celebrity. You know, these guys were like, I looked up to them, and I love what they did for a living. So I got hooked on it early, and did a lot of interning in college at Miami of Ohio, the strength and conditioning department. And I was also working in the summertime at a sports performance facility. And I got exposure to NFL combine training and athletic performance training all throughout college, and did that all 4 years. So when I got out, took an internship at Notre Dame under Mickey Marotti, who's now the strength coach at Florida. Terrific experience, and I really thought I was going to be a strength coach. You know, that was kind of the path I was going down, but a few circumstances hit, and ended up coming back from South Bend and took a job at a geriatric fitness facility, for lack of a better term. They offered health benefits, and I was fresh out of college, so did that, and that was obviously an entirely different population than what I was used to working with, but you know, I, for whatever reason, I just kind of got gravitated towards adult fitness, general fitness, and was still training people on the side outside of that job, out of my parents' garage, and still training some athletes at that time. And I just decided in 2002 that I wanted to break away from the commercial fitness center, and I approached a guy who I interned with in college about opening up a small studio, and we did that and catered to general fitness, fat loss clients. And about 3 years later, I broke away from him and opened my own facility, and that's where I am right now.
I want to back up just a little bit. First thing I want to hit on is what kind of inspiration did the Hulk give you? In terms of the audio,
I should say. a lot of brothers, keep going, brother, you know, all that stuff. I was just infatuated with that stuff, you know, and I still remember, you know, the training, the saying the prayers, the eating the vitamins. That was continually reinforced throughout the little workout tape. So, yeah, he's kind of the guy that was responsible for getting me hooked on this stuff.
Did you ever think he would still be wrestling today?
No, God, no. I mean, he's retired and come back so many times. I mean, it's actually amazing that the guy's still standing, but I guess he's still got to make a living, apparently. I watch his reality show, and that seems to be the case.
Poor guy. And the first thing I want to hit on is you talked a little bit about training athletes and thinking about wanting to go into strength and conditioning full-time, but then you kind of got the bug to train – you know, everyday people and just, you know, those people that work the 9-to-5 and things like that. You know, can you talk a little bit more about that? And also, do you miss training those athletes? Do you wish you could go back and change anything?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I still get my athlete fix. I deal with a couple of, I'm based in Cincinnati, and I get to deal with a couple of the Cincinnati Bengals during certain times of the year when they're here, you know, prepping for, voluntary workouts. So I still get to deal with those guys a little bit, which is great. So I get that fix. I think the thing that aspiring strength coaches need to understand is that you really have to pay your dues in that field for a long, long time. And there's really, you know, I'm not going to say a handful, but there's a minimal amount of really good jobs out there. So I just think at that time I had some financial circumstances, you know, family circumstances that I needed to make guaranteed money and have health insurance and all that, you know, right now, and an opportunity presented itself and I took it. So the bottom line is, if you really want to get in the strength and conditioning field, you're going to have to pay your dues, you're going to have to volunteer, you're going to have to intern, you're going to have to GA, and you're going to have to work yourself up the rope slowly if you want to be a collegiate or a pro strength and conditioning coach.
And you also mentioned a little bit about how you kind of walk into these seminars, and they are very much like, I think you can even mention the Perform Better seminars. Some of them are like rock concerts in terms of the people that go there. They've never seen the likes of, you know, Mike Boyle or Gray Cook and things like that. And I've multiple times I've mentioned on the show that I am still, when Mike walks into the room, I'm still like, you know, I stand up straight, I listen to everything he has to say, and I'm still incredibly nervous around him. Do you still get that feeling when you go meet these people?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I remember walking in, I mean, way back when, at the time, Hammer Strength, I was a big, like, HIT, Arthur Jones Nautilus disciple for a long time. A lot of people don't know that, but I was in that. I was like a HIT disciple. And Hammer Strength would put on strength conditioning clinics. And, you know, they were good in that Hammer was kind of affiliated with that training philosophy, but they would bring in guys with all different philosophies and methodologies. And I remember walking in, you got Boyd Epley from Nebraska at the time, and Mickey Marotti and from at the time he was at the University of Cincinnati, and Ken Manny from Michigan State, who's still there. You know, just all these, you know, Al Johnson from West Virginia, all these guys, they were iconic. And it's funny you say that because I know you work for Mike Boyle. You know, I'm a member of Alan Cosgrove's coaching group. It's like the first time I went out to the 3-day seminar, I'm like, hey, I saw on Cosgrove, you know, I'm in person live. And it's kind of funny. You hear all these guys on podcasts and read their stuff, but, you know, you get out there and it's really, really cool to meet them in person and develop a relationship with them.
And let's talk a little bit about opening that facility. You know, what kind of steps did you have to take in terms of finding the right place to obviously put the facility in? Also, what did you do in terms of finding the right equipment, and what did you figure were the priorities for in terms of equipment and Yeah, I think we'll get started with that. I think.
No, and that's, I was lucky in that when I decided to open my own facility, I had a huge clientele. So it wasn't though I was opening the doors and hoping people would come. I mean, I had a what we call a receivables base. I had a loyal clientele, most of whom would have been with me for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years already. So I felt confident in making that move. You know, I did a lot of things wrong in working with Alan and Rachel Cosgrove. You know, I think being a trainer and being a business owner are two entirely different things. So if you want to open your own training facility, you need to have some business acumen, and you really, really need to learn the business side of things. And that's something I didn't do. I knew I wanted my overhead low. So, you know, I found a 1500 square foot spot. And I also knew that I didn't need a lot of equipment. You know, I'd moved away from that. I needed a whole line of hammer strength and 5 pieces of cardio. When I opened, I laid some rubber flooring from Perform Better. I got a Freedom Trainer, a rack, dumbbells to 100, 2 benches, and, you know, and then some bands and a couple kettlebells and some ropes. And I was, you know, that's how I started it out, and just kind of went from there. Paid all that off in a year, and then, you know, every year I kind of had a wish list where I've added things. You know, I've added Airdynes and Concept rowers and, you know, just little gadgets and med balls and med ball rebounders and all that stuff. So it's definitely, you don't want to go into this blind without knowing what you're doing. So I would highly recommend for all the aspiring, you know, training facility owners out there that you find a mentor. And I know that's been said on the FitCast number of times. Find people in the field who are making money and doing a great job, and, you know, pay to have them mentor you. And I'm telling you right now, you can't look at that as an expense. You got to look at it as an investment. And it's, you know, the work I've done with the cost growth is already, it's already paid for itself. So, you know, that would be my tip to the aspiring facility owners.
Anything that's currently on that wish list that you are looking to add in the near future?
Yeah, definitely need to get a glute ham raise. You know, that's on my wish list. I want a Versa climber. You know, I'm all into the metabolic resistance training, the metabolic circuits. We do a lot of that stuff at the facility. You know, and I'm always keeping my eye out for things. So this year, that's probably going to be at a glute ham raise and a Versa climber. So I'm excited about that.
You talked a little bit about what you do with your clients in terms of programming. Could you talk a little bit about how you do structure your programs to their clients? And, you know, is it generally full body stuff and what you do for conditioning?
Yep. I mean, it's, you know, I've moved to, I think here's the other thing for trainers. You know, you don't sell workouts, you sell programs and you sell coaching. And, you know, if you're not on a template-based training system that's completely, you know, reproducible, you need to be. You can't wing this stuff and just go in blind and say, I feel like doing this today with this person. Everything has to be systemized. The programming's got to be systemized. The business side of thing has to be systemized. Your marketing has to be systemized. But 90% of my clientele are your general fitness fat loss clients. And, you know, I have about 40 weeks of programming all preset. And then based on the assessment that we do, I just pick exercises in the movement categories that are appropriate based on, you know, their score on the functional movement screen. And, you know, I do some stuff from assess and correct and what have you. So, and I just plug in and we change, you know, we do 4-week phases and, we just progress things accordingly. So it's a real, real basic, you know, we just hit all the movement planes, horizontal push, horizontal pull, you know, hip dominant, knee dominant, you know, anti-extension, anti-rotation, just, you know, all the stuff that everybody in the know is already doing. You know, I'm not a real creative guy. I'm not like Nick Cumanello who comes up with some really cool stuff. You know, I pretty much, you know, I know who to listen to, and if I like something that somebody puts out there, I incorporate it in my program. So I really encourage trainers to come up with a template-based system based on movement categories. You know, I just look out for exercises. You know, I'll see stuff on Nick Tumanello's site. I'm going, oh, yeah, that would fall into my anti-extension category. You know, I just put one of his exercises in a paw-off press variation. I just added that to my template. So I just kind of look out for things that I like and add them to the template. And I had an intern working now on actually videotaping every exercise in my template, which there's, I don't know, there's 400 plus exercises in there. And that's going to be great for distance coaching because I can spit out a program to a client and they have a visual, you know, right there. So I'm excited about that.
You know, one other thing I want to talk about a little bit is you mentioned a little bit about continuing education. What are your kind of your sources that you go to in terms of bettering yourself?
Yeah, I'm fanatic. I mean, I'm like manic about continuing education, and it's actually gone a little bit overboard. I mean, I'm reading, you know, Alan Kosker suggested I filter things, which was a good idea. I was reading 40 plus blogs a week and, you know, listening to 3 or 4 different podcasts and, you know, perusing YouTube, you know, with all the guys that I follow and making sure I didn't miss out anything there. Going to seminars, you know, you have to do this stuff. But you also, at the same time, need to know how to filter it, especially if you're trying to run a business. I mean, you can't spend 4 hours a day on continuing education. I think at one point I was doing that on top of seeing, you know, 10, 12 clients. And that's not an exaggeration. I was just, and I like the stuff. I mean, I love to know. I've always been that way. I've been through like 4 year phases of my life where I was like really into pro wrestling and I was really into basketball and then I was really into skateboarding. And it's like whatever I was into at the time, I had to know everything about. And now the fitness thing, this has been going on for 16 years. So, and I still feel the same way about it. And that's a lot of, you know, Kevin, that's a lot of the, what I see with trainers that contact me and, you know, wondering how to build a clientele. After they get their ACE certification or their ACSM certification, they think they're done. They think they're experts. And that stuff, you know, a lot of the things the certification organizations are putting out there, in my opinion, is kind of outdated. And, you know, I know Mike Boyle and the NSCA have been kind of going back and forth. And not to put fuel on that fire, but, you know, I just think, you know, if you think you get your NSCA, your ACSM, or your ACE, and you're an expert, and you can go out and train people, you're wrong. And because somebody down the street's going to be, you know, doing it better, reading more, going to more seminars, and they're going to take your clients. And that's the position I've always taken. You know, I wanted to know more than anybody about programming and in my area. And I feel like I do, and I try to stay well ahead of the bell-shaped curve. So.
Yeah, it's really interesting to bring up the topic of certifications and trying to think about really how relevant they even are anymore, because you do see the, I mean, if people don't know about it, if you haven't been following what's been going on, basically the NSCA has now, they blacklisted Mike from all their seminars, and also they will no longer be giving CEUs to any seminars that Mike even presents at. So say he presents at a Perform Better seminar where there's 5 presenters, but he's just one of them. They will not allow any CEUs to be given for any of the presentations at that seminar. So it's a little bit of politics going on right now in the fitness industry. And just, you know, it's getting a lot of people thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't even renew my CSCS. Maybe, you know, how much does it really mean? And, or maybe there's another certification out there that's better. But, you know, I think it, PJ, like you said, it all comes down to doing things outside of the classroom, outside of the certification, and making sure you're still going to the seminars, reading books. Like, you can get books for almost nothing on Amazon.com now. So it's, you know,
right,
you're really hurting yourself not doing it. Or like strength and conditioning webinars. Like, that's, you know, great resources to.
Yeah, I mean, that's a terrific source. I mean, it's really, it's kind of disheartening, because if you don't subscribe to the party line of X certifying body, you're kind of, yeah, it's like you said, you're blacklisted. You know, if you disagree with anything and you're writing and presenting and you're kind of a public figure in the industry, you know, you're kind of thrown to the wayside and blacklisted. And that's unfortunate, because I know Mike, I mean, guy's a top guy in the field, in my opinion, and he's still, you know, old Mike Boyle changes his mind. Well, no kidding, he changes his mind, because he keeps on wanting to learn more.
Yeah.
And you're going to change your stance. So I think that's a good thing, but it's unfortunate if you don't subscribe to a certain party line that you're kind of on the outside looking in. But it is unfortunate, that's for sure.
Well, PJ, before we wrap up, can you give, again, the audience a little bit of info on where they can check out some of your stuff, or if you have anything coming up that people should keep a lookout for? I know you've had some articles on Elite FTS and also in Men's Fitness. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yep. Again, as you said earlier, you can check me out at CincinnatiFitnessTrainer.com. And then my blog is Personal Trainers, that's plural, Trainers Cincinnati, all one string, .com, and I update that frequently. There's several hundred postings there already. My YouTube channel is a continual work in progress, and that's youtube.com/Iron, IronStriet. And in September, I'll be featured in Men's Fitness again in their trainer spotlight, so I'm excited about that as well.
I'd say you're doing a pretty good job on the YouTube channel already. You got like 300 videos up there, so doing all right.
But, I think real quick for the trainers out there that are aspiring to work with a general fitness, fat loss, adult fitness clientele, I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing, the mistake is people are making, you have to set your clients' expectations from the get-go in terms of what your program can and cannot deliver, because 90% of your adult fitness people are going to be coming in wanting to lose a significant amount of weight and body fat. Mm-hmm. And if you try to promote your program as a weight loss program and you tell people that, sure, you can come in and see me two or three hours a week and not change your diet and not do anything outside of seeing me and transform your body, I mean, you're lying to those people. And I see a lot of trainers doing that just to get people in the door. That might be okay to get people in the door, but after a month, you're going to lose the client. So I think you need to tell your new prospects, going in, set the stage, set the tone, set their expectations, because I can guarantee that they're going to get stronger and better conditioned. They're going to move better and pain-free. They're going to sleep better. They're going to have less stress. I can back that up and guarantee it and show it to them. But if I promote it early on, it's a weight loss program, and you're going to lose tons of body weight without having to do anything on your own, you're not going to retain that client. So that's a common mistake I'm seeing people make more and more. So just keep that in mind if you're a trainer coming up and you want to retain clients.
Very good, and I think that's a great point. I think a lot of people would actually rather pay money to sleep better and just move better and feel better and then get the weight loss as they clean up their nutrition on the way too. I think that's it's huge. Well, PJ, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a huge pleasure, and we hope to have you on again sometime down the line.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right, we're here in the off-topic discussion. I am not by myself this time. I have Dr. Jonathan Fass of JonathanFass.kissmyass.com. John?
Yeah, I just changed the URL like a minute ago. Thank you for indicating that in the incredible opening introduction you just gave me.
Thank you. I forget what movie it is referenced to. It's like, check out my website. It's like www.kissmyass.com.
Nope. And usually I don't. Let's just put it out there.
So, John, I was talking to you while I was going to the bathroom about this arcade machine that I've built. refurbished. Well, I was just yelling from the bathroom.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
So, basically, I talked a little bit about this in What Up, Kev, but I have my Street Fighter machine, my Marvel vs. Street Fighter machine, and I took out that game and bought this little thing that's like a hybrid of a computer and an arcade machine, and installed that into the cabinet along with brand new joysticks, brand new buttons, and stereo speakers. And the thing is like, it has over 1,200 games on it.
That's impressive.
I mean, most of them are crap. I'd say about 90% of them I will never, or probably maybe 80% of them I'll never play, but it's got like all the Street Fighters, all the Mortal Kombats, all the Killer Instincts. It's got like Versus Super Mario Brothers. It's got Battletoads, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Simpsons arcade game, G.I. Joe. You know, it's a fortress of fun. And honestly, I'm going to take pictures of it because people ask me to take pictures of it and post it online. So I'll post it on like Facebook or on KevinLarby.com.
Cool.
And other than that, I beat this game called Alan Wake last week. It took me about 3 weeks to beat a six-hour game, which is my life right now. But it was pretty good. John, I think it's a reason for you to pick up an Xbox 360. It's really good.
It's that good.
But you won't.
Probably won't.
And like I said in What Up Kev, I have Super Mario Galaxy 2 that I've had for almost 3 weeks and I've yet to open. And it's supposed to be the best game of the year.
It is supposed to be very good. I did read something about it.
I might try to play a little bit of that tonight before I go to the Perform Better. Because that would be good, I think.
Possibly. I think it'd be great.
Thanks, John.
How about that?
And I don't know, John. That's all. What have you been up to?
Oh, I don't know. I was
the season
traveling.
Finale of Lost. But did we talk about that?
No, we didn't.
Should we talk about spoilers? Should we give people let them know that we're going to talk about the ending of Lost?
We can give a spoiler. Yes.
Did if you watch you the end not- of Flash Forward?
No.
I found out who farted. It was my wife.
Nice. No, I didn't.
It's Penny.
I think I gave up on that about 2 months ago.
Yeah. It got canceled. Maybe even 3 years.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. A bunch of stuff got canceled.
What else got canceled? Did V get canceled?
No, V got like 13 more episodes, though, so they're just giving him a shortened season next year. But like they killed a ton of shows. Like there was this new Alyssa Milano show they killed after 3 episodes.
Wow.
I don't know off the top of my head right now, but I like to read TVSquad.com. It's like a blog about television. Done by the AOL guys, but they just announced the new Adventures of Old Christine just got canceled.
Oh.
Which stinks. They brought back Chuck for another year, though.
That's cool. That's
fantastic show.
Yeah, it is a good show. My watching schedule is like ridiculous, but it is a good show from the episodes I've seen.
So, yeah, I guess there's not too much, but I don't know. Do you want to talk? Did you see the finale, John? Of Lost?
Oh, God, yes.
All right, we're going to talk about Lost for like the next 5 minutes, probably for the rest of this off topic. So if you don't want to hear about the ending of Lost, please stop listening right now. I'll give you 5 more seconds. And then we're going to talk about some Lost. And that's been about 5 seconds, right, John?
I think so, sure. Go for it.
All right, so the end of the show sucked.
Are you insane?
That's all I got to say.
Are you insane?
Last episode was absolute garbage. The last, like, half of it was garbage.
Are you insane?
The purgatory, John.
You really didn't get the whole damn thing, did you?
What did I not get, John? Explain to me what I didn't get.
No. You explain. You made the comment. You tell me what you think happened.
Basically, the whole time, Jack himself was stuck in purgatory, and he was so close to these people on the island that he needed to somehow find them all again, or in this alternate universe, he had to find them all again. So we could go to heaven or something like that.
The whole time meaning what? The entire series?
No, after he died on the island, I guess.
So what whole time? I'm trying to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Should I really have to think about the ending of a finale?
Yeah, you
so
really didn't. You really didn't get it, did you?
Okay, so he died in that last scene on the island, and from there on out, he was on that alternate world 2004. Sorry, I don't go to the forums, John. Right. I don't fucking read forums. Oops.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not blinking that out. I don't read forums, John.
Yeah, neither do I, pal.
And I don't
read. All I had to do was actually pay attention to the show.
I did pay attention. I had my laptop out the whole time, but I paid attention for the most part.
Exactly. Yes, the whole sideways world wasn't a purgatory. It was like a reunion of afterlife. It was a holding place, but it wasn't a purgatory. Purgatory was on the island, which is why where Michael's soul and the rest of the souls where the whispers came from. And the reason why that was on the island is because the island contained the essence of life or the life force of the entire planet right there on the island. So if you couldn't enter the light, you were forced to remain outside of the light.
I'm going to be really honest. I really don't care.
Mm.
Like, I liked the show up until...
Dude, the last episode was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was freaking brilliant.
All right. Season finale of Chuck was also outstanding. It had Scott Bakula in it again.
Oh, yeah? No, that's great.
No Quantum Leap references at all.
That's
or, like, no boring. References to Sam Beckett or Al right. or... You know, at, Ziggy. Yeah.
Right. Ziggy.
That's a bummer. But, all right, John, you get anything else?
I don't know. I was in, like, London and crap, but you whatever.
Can't well, sorry. I thought you couldn't talk about this stuff because you're top secret, John.
It's friggin' posted all over my Facebook.
I don't look at your blanking Facebook.
Yes, you do.
No, I really don't.
Yes, you do.
I Okay, let's be serious, and the people who are on the show who follow me on Facebook can attest this. How much have I been on Facebook in the last 3 weeks? How much have I posted stuff? Maybe in the last like 4 or 5 days, but the previous 3 weeks I was non-existent on the website.
I just posted it today.
Well, I haven't looked at it today, and I'm trying to look right now, and your page won't come up.
Well, that's for shame. And I could say where I traveled. I just can't say who I traveled with. Plus, you know you're full
hey,
of crap.
Hey, look at I'm John Fast here.
You know you're full of crap because the two episodes before, you even said that I was visiting Willy Wonka. And that's
I knew
in
you were
England.
Traveling.
And that's in England.
No, it's not.
It is. It's Willy Wonka's chocolate factory is English.
Okay.
I don't know.
I just want to reference a picture of John taking a picture of himself in a mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Why is that thing saying stay tuned for the next 30 to 60 seconds?
Because that's what the commercial was at the time. I had a TV in the mirror.
Oh, that's a TV.
That's a TV in the mirror in the bathroom. So that while you're like brushing your teeth or shaving or something, you can still watch TV.
Wow,
how sick is that? Yeah, how sick.
That's such BS. I should have gone to England before you did.
Man. Well, you didn't.
Why don't people from England send me a free trip? I'll come hang out at your gym.
That's probably why they didn't send you a free trip.
Probably.
Yeah.
This off topic stinks without Lee.
It always stinks. I'm embarrassed for my own life when we do these things.
Some people like it.
I know.
Let's see. Maybe
I think they're laughing at us, not with us.
I sold a bunch of my video games, John.
Did you?
I did.
Did it hurt? Did it feel like...
It felt kind of good to get rid of some stuff. I have a lot of clutter in my room. I literally have... I've reduced my number of video games to about 80.
Wow.
But, I mean, think about it this way. My Xbox 360... My games went from like about 40 to 15. And
that's pretty decent.
And I own one PlayStation 3 game, and I own three Wii games, and two of them I haven't opened yet. So that's cool. And I got some new Blu-rays. I got Resident Evil 3 on Blu-ray finally, so I completed the Resident Evil collection. For now on Blu-ray. So I now have completed that collection. Crank, Transporter, Fast and the Furious, because Too Fast, Too Furious never happened. So I have all of those. I mean, you could really say that Crank is a sequel to Transporter.
I don't think so either.
Okay, that's it. We're gonna stop recording.
Thank God.